You are listening to the Team Flower Podcast, where we talk about flowers and the people who have dedicated their lives to sharing them with the world. We believe that our work with flowers matters, and we're cheering each of you on. This podcast is brought to you by Team Flower, an online support community dedicated to educating, connecting, and empowering flower lovers worldwide. We provide online classes, in-person events, and weekly free resources designed to support you and your journey with flowers. Whether you're a professional florist, flower farmer, or simply love flowers, there's space for you here. Come join the party at teamflower.org. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Team Flower Podcast. I am Janine, and today I'm chatting with Jan Donkers from Village Flower Farm. Village Flower Farm is a boutique flower farm and a design studio in Ontario, and they focus on growing unique varieties of cut flowers and are just deeply inspired by the natural rhythm of the seasons. They operate their on-farm flower shop during the growing months, offering fresh flowers and other pieces. And they also host workshops, giving their customers a chance to connect to the world of flowers and farming. We are celebrating with Jan because she was chosen as one of Florists Review 35 Florists Under 35, which is so cool. Really proud of you. Really proud of you, Jan. That's awesome. If you guys want to find them, give them a follow. You can find them on Instagram at village.flowerfarm or online at villageflowerfarm.ca. Welcome, Jan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, absolutely. I'm excited. I love to just start off hearing from you. Why flowers? Like, why flower farming? How did you get here to where you are?
I also love hearing like people's like journeys of how they got to flowers, because everybody is so unique in this. But
yes,
for me, this was totally born out of COVID. So I lived out in Western Canada for 10 years. And about 3 years ago, I grew up on like a family farm. So my family farms in Ontario. I was living out west at the time and nobody was taking over the farm. And so my dad was kind of like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I could come home and farm. So my husband and I moved back to Ontario, and I farm alongside my dad. So we actually operate our family's grain farm. So we have about 400 acres of grain and do some custom work on top of that. But that was kind of like my introductory into farming. But I had originally grown up on a dairy farm. And so dairy farm, contrasting with grain farming, is a different kind of time commitment, I would say. Mm-hmm. So coming back to the grain farm, I had... it's kind of like free time, essentially, in points of the growing season where there wasn't as big of a workload as there was back on the dairy farm when my parents were still milking cows. And so I just filled that time with growing flowers. I was cruising like the depths of Instagram, I think at the time in like 2019, and came across Florette. And at that point, I had never considered growing flowers before. I had grown up growing a vegetable garden, but I was like, whoa, this is so unique. And it was just kind of like an avenue for me to bring some femininity into this world of grain farming, which was very masculine, very like I was just always surrounded by men, which was totally fine. But I was having a hard time finding like my own personal femininity in farming in that kind of space. And so I had grown just a small cutting garden in 2019. And then in 2020, I took a bigger leap of faith and started growing on a, I wouldn't say a bigger scale for me. We have about an acre and a half in production now. So it's just been a funny way to get there, but that's kind of how I got to flower farming. Is it just kind of popped into my world. I never thought about it. And I just started experimenting from there. And that's kind of how I got my start.
Wow. Oh my goodness. That's so neat. From a dairy farm to a grain farm to a flower farm.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, yeah, I think when I first started, I come from like my whole family, my uncles, my cousins, everybody are farmers, but they're all dairy farmers, grain farmers. And then I started flower farming, and I think a lot of people were skeptical at first, but yeah, I've been so pleasantly surprised with just the growth of our little business and just
that's awesome
support in our community, which has been amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And now all of those people who are skeptical are asking you or coming to you for flowers and not so skeptical anymore, which is awesome. Yeah. Oh, that's so fun. Okay, I want to hear, I'm so curious about what life was like growing up on a farm.
Yeah, it was, I know, I feel like we didn't know any different except when we started getting older and our friends didn't have to hop off the bus and go straight to the barn and they got to play with their friends or not have to do chores every day. But sure. It was the best type of life. My dad farmed with his brother, my uncle. And so it was our two families on one farm. There was five kids there. I was the youngest of five, but it was just such a nice way to grow up. Our parents were like, had us involved in the operation right from the get-go. So whether we were milking cows or feeding calves, or my brother was driving tractors and my cousins were operating equipment, it was kind of like a whole family operation, which was great to be a part of. And it just built a really good work ethic and strong family values, but even like life values of just watching, like at the end of the day in farming, it's like your business partner is Mother Nature. And she is not kind at times.
She can be ruthless.
Can be a little ruthless. And just seeing the resiliency in like my parents, my aunt and uncle, and just like my even extended family, everybody being in farming, of having a good year, having a bad year, and kind of riding that wave, and just the optimism that everybody holds. Like, I just even think coming back to the farm as like an adult, and just watching how optimistic my dad is, has just been something just really amazing to kind of come back to and reinstill that in myself, that not everything's gonna work out the way you want it to work out, but it's just to keep going forward and kind of keep having this light at the end of the tunnel and know what you're working for and what you're working towards. And yeah, but so that was like farm life. I loved it. And I never, back when I was living out west, I was a total mountain girl, just hiking and skiing and all that. And I had married my husband out west, and I joked to him because when we first met, I was like, oh yeah, I'm from a farm. He's like, oh yeah, that's great. But he never really got exposed to that person of myself. And then right after we got married, I'm like, hey, we're going to move back to the farm. And he's not a farm kid. And so we moved back to the farm, and he's like, oh my gosh, who are you? The transition back.
Oh, that's awesome. I think it's really, it's really sweet. All of the lessons that you picked up on and learned as a kid by, you know, from having a strong work integrity, and just putting in the work that you had to do. Like you did what you had to do, all the way to the things that you learned from your parents and watching them be farmers and make a living doing that. Man, what a gift, right? What a gift that was to you. Like, even if you weren't a flower farmer, that's a gift. And now that this is your life, it's like doubly so.
Yeah. Even going into like this venture, like I had never grown a flower before, but before 2019, like before that, like little cutting garden, I had never grown a flower. And then just to see, like, it really is, if you dream it and you want to do it, like my parents have just been there being like, sure, go ahead, try whatever you want to try. They've let me take over parts of the field that used to grow corn and wheat and soybeans, and now they grow.
Wow.
And so awesome. It's just like very encouraging that it's, yeah, you can really just believe in your own skills and know that like if you work hard and you're dedicated, that there's going to be a good outcome, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And how powerful is it to have parents who believe in you and support you and want to help make your dreams come true too? Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so at the time that this episode is being aired, I'm not sure what the growing season is where you are.
Well, we've already had our first frost.
Okay.
Everything's dead. I'm like deep into the garden cleanup.
Okay. All right. Well, so what happens if you go out in the morning and you weren't expecting a frost and there was a frost of all of your blooms?
Every Canadian grower's nightmare, because, or like even in the northern states, of just like having that freak frost happen earlier than you expect. October 1st is typically in our area, in our growing zone, I guess, a frost. So we were a couple weeks early this year. And it's kind of like by the end of the season, you're anticipating that to come. So, I mean, you just see a field of black, black,
oh my gosh,
videos, black, everything, just sad. I think at that time, I think everybody in our area, you're kind of like, it's in the back of your mind that frost could come at time after September, really. And so I think for me, I'm just grateful for any week after like Labor Day weekend in Canada that is, you get to add to your growing cycle, because you just never know. And I know that some people, like, you could try to get, like, sometimes I'll plan like, oh, I'm going to plant these flowers or these varieties in my like low tunnel to have some added protection to get a little bit more length out of the season. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's the cycle of Mother Nature, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I know, like, we, you know, we could talk about growing flowers all day and we probably will at some point, but I just don't think that a lot of people talk about what happens after the frost. So when the growing season ends, what does that look like? Is it just like an immediate, you know, let's say you don't have like a hoop house or little tunnels or whatever. It's like the end of the growing season. What are the steps that you take to enter into the off season?
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. I feel like in terms of growing flowers, there is so much behind the scenes that happens that your customers or clients or whoever just never really think about, like when it comes down to time or like pricing, even of how you're pricing things. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so much time. But yeah, essentially after a frost, everything is done outside. And that process is tearing out the old crops, lifting up we have just some like weed barrier that we use, like landscape fabric, taking out irrigation, blowing out irrigation lines. I even like something that I do too here is I grow cover crops. So it's reseeding an entire cover crop of rye over my flower acres. And digging dahlias. That's what I was doing before this podcast, digging and dividing dahlias. I'm like, just and it's just, yeah, it's a long process of tidying up and then amending beds. There's some things here in Canada that like your like cold hardy annuals, essentially, that you can plant in early frost. Even if you're going to get a light frost, they're usually okay. But if you don't have some of your beds amended by the fall, you can't get into the garden when you could be planting earlier. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's amending your beds and getting things prepped. It's planting thousands of tulips and daffodils and prepping for the next season. There's a lot of things that, get planted now for next year already.
Wow. That's so many things. There are so many things. Can we dig into some of those? Is that okay with you? Yeah, okay.
Right now is dahlia digging. So digging hundreds, thousands of dahlias out of the ground, washing, dividing them, storing them. That's my next project for probably the next week or 2 weeks. Our tulips will hopefully arrive within the next week, 2 weeks. And then it's planting thousands of tulips on the farm as well. And so, yeah, it's just a busy time.
Okay, so we've got the digging of the dahlias, which I love that you say dahlias, and you know how different, you know, different regions pronounce different flowers differently, and I think that's awesome. Okay, so we've got that. Let's see. You mentioned cover crops. What does that look like? Like if, you know, if someone else wants to try it, how do you choose a cover crop, and what does that process look like?
So this is something that even my dad and I are starting to introduce in like our grain farming. And that's where I kind of got the concept from, is after we're done harvesting our corn, soybeans, and wheat, we go back into our fields and we plant rye seed. And we plant rye over all of our acres. That rye will start to grow through the late fall into the winter, over the snow, and then begin to start growing again in early spring. And so we'll kill that rye crop before we plant in the next year's kind of corn, soybeans, and wheat. And the reason why we're planting a cover crop is it really is trying to build our organic matter in our soil. And whether you're farming in like a big scale, like I do with my dad on the grain side or my flower side, it really all comes down to the health and quality of your soil. So the healthier your soil, you can kind of think of it, the more you put into your soil, the healthier crop, the better blooms you're going to get on the other side. And so one way, instead of just taking from your soil, is to put back some nutrients into that soil in a sustainable or more like organic way. And that's through cover cropping. We choose rye here because it grows really fast. It can survive our winters and it creates a really big root mass. And so those roots, when you kill it in the spring, and in my flower field, I kill my rye with a giant silage tarp. So about a month before I start growing, I go out into my garden and I put this massive black tarp essentially on the ground over where all my beds are. And I weigh them sandbags, and I let the sun heat up underneath this tarp. And what it does is it smothers and kind of like decomposes all the rye back into the soil so that I'm getting all that organic matter. It's kind of like if you think about making like a giant bed of compost, essentially. So it's great because there's even some more, like you get really good weed suppression. I battle weeds here because where I grow, it used to be an old cow pasture. And so I'm battling grasses, all that kind of stuff where I'm growing. So doing the rye and doing the silage tarp to kind of like break down all that back into the soil is helping year after year. And then you can also like the better, healthier soil, you get better water retention. So this year for us was one heck of a growing season. Like we're in extreme drought where we were. We had any rain through the summer months, and you can irrigate as much as you want, but the rain will pump up your flowers like nothing else. Like it doesn't matter how much you irrigate from a well or from your whatever you're using. It's like the rain is like liquid gold, honestly. And so, yeah, that's like one thing that I'll do in the next. Well, I have done part of our field already, but there's a couple sections that I still have left to do to plant rye, but that's something else that gets done in the fall too.
Wow. How cool. That's such a cool process. And I really appreciate that you described like why you guys do that. And it sounds like it is a great thing for the crops and the soil. And that I'm assuming just kind of leads into the amending of the soils, amending your beds, which is what you mentioned before. Is that kind of what Is that like the extent of what you guys do, or are there other things that
And add some things in the spring, whether it's bone meal or other fertilizers, just to aid in some of the amendments of adding in the compost to the beds. But we kind of try to keep things as simple as possible and just really focus on building that organic matter. We don't like even like experimenting with like the no-till trends that are happening. I like follow so many market gardeners, like vegetable people, and just their tactics of no-till is so interesting to me. And the idea of no-till is don't till your soil and leave your soil as intact as possible so that you're not disrupting the microbiome of that soil. And then that's the more healthier soil as it goes. And I'm a total newbie when it comes to some of this stuff, but it's been really cool to see the difference of soil, like from year to year, doing the cover cropping or doing some of these practices, even like into your yields, like from the grain side and from the flower side, which is like, it's just cool to see that some of your practices that you can do like this really benefits. Like you can see the benefit that year, the next season. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. That's so, so neat. Okay. So let's say you've got all of the rye planted, everything that needs to be done in that regard. Is there like more off time after you do that? And
then what time are you done? Like usually I'm hoping to be done wrapped up before the snow starts flying.
Okay, cool.
So normally it's like, I would say I try to be aimed like this year because we've had no rain. My garden cleanup is like weeks ahead. I feel so ahead right now. It's sad though, because it's the only reason is because we got no rain.
Right.
It's like, I would say by the end of November, I feel pretty wrapped up in the garden and wrapped up in that space. But then it's like the month of December, it feels like, and then I start seeding again indoors in January, which is like, so the off season doesn't really like, I guess the off season isn't as physical. But it's a lot of organization and prep in the off season, like through the winter months here. So like I said, our growing season goes from basically May till September. So everything in between there, you're ordering seeds, you're starting seeds. I start seeding like eucalyptus or lisianthus here in January. So by the time January rolls around, you're kind of making your growing list, your succession planning, all that kind of stuff through those months. And that's another thing that like your customers might not be like understanding how long it takes to get these flowers into their hands at points. Like I remember I grew lisianthus for the first time this year from seed. So I started the seed, I didn't buy plugs, and I had a pretty good run at it. But when my customers would come into the shop, I would be like, please appreciate this flower more than ever. I have known this for like 8 months. And they're like, yeah, that's cool. I'm like, yeah, it is like some people, like, I think you can get people on board. And some people are like, can't believe that that's what you've been doing.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, good job on the lisianthus, because I have talked to many a grower who have said that lisianthus is so hard to grow from seed.
Oh.
But I'm sure too, with customers, anyone who has like, I feel like anyone who has grown anything from seed has more of an appreciation for the things that they purchase. Like even this was several years ago, before my husband and I moved, but one of my birthday gifts were raised beds. And this was like before my flowers entered my life. And so we just grew some vegetables and herbs and stuff. But I just remember like we had this crop of green beans, and it was like two meals worth. And I was like,
at that table, everybody, is this not the best green bean you've ever tasted?
I know. I grew and snapped it myself. It's great. And now they're gone. But it just, I don't know. If you've never grown anything, I feel like you should like just go get a, you know, a little package of zinnias or something from the store and pop them in some soil, and just, it's magical for one thing, but it also, I think, gives you an appreciation for the process and, helps you to just have more patience, I think, just with in general, maybe.
I totally agree. I like, love that. I definitely think like being on that journey or being on that process gives you so much more gratitude for that whole journey of start to finish. You know, it takes a lot of planning, a lot of work, really, to like get the design, even to like be happy with your design. I remember my first year, I grew like just random things and in random color palettes. Like, I never thought about the color palettes. What am I gonna do with this magenta crazy zinnia? Like, it doesn't match anything I've grown. But then it's like, now I've like dialed in kind of like my style, my color palettes, that everything works together. And it's like, even that in the process of growing, where you're like, I've planned this palette in November of the previous growing year, ordered all of the seeds, started all of these seeds. And then you're watching your customers walk out your door with this palette of like a variety of flowers that you have can like conceptually visualized for so many months, you know?
That's really neat. I've never actually heard it presented that way. And honestly, Jan, I've never thought about like that part of the process for growers, mm-hmm. as in regards to like thinking about color palette. I mean, obviously for those who grow to sell to florists, for to other floral designers, like I've had people ask, you know, what would you like to design with, or what are your clients asking for, so on and so forth. But even for your own business and own designs, I just have never really thought about that aspect. So thank you for opening my eyes to that. And maybe there's even beginner growers who are just like, oh, that's what I should be doing.
That is like my advice. If you are a new grower and you're trying to figure out where to start, I think trial and error is your best bet, of course. Like that's how I started. And then go back to the drawing board every year and see what your customers liked, like I think, and what you actually used in design. Because I think you can get overwhelmed. You like look at these seed like catalogs, or you follow Florette and you're like, I want to grow everything. And yeah. Beautiful. And you're just like constantly adding to cart. And then at the end of it all, sometimes you're just left with a mix match of ingredients that, oh my gosh, I had all these like peachy tones, but half of them bloom in spring and half of them bloom in late summer. And you don't get the overlap that you were expecting from these like seasonal flowers. It's like, yeah, kind of creating backwards of like, what design do you want to be? What do you want to have on the design side? And then working backwards from there and making sure that your palettes are going together and that your seasonal flowers are overlapping in some way.
Wow, man. Okay. So here I'm going to pose to you two questions. There are so many logistics and behind the scenes aspects of flower farming, but if there was one task that you could just close your eyes and snap your fingers and it be done, what would you want it to be?
I want my dahlias to be dug and divided, Janine. It's just like, it takes so much time. I said that out to my Instagram the other day, and I had so many flower farmers being like, I feel the same way.
Like, oh my gosh.
So time consuming, but they're so beautiful. So you can never cross them off your list because you just are like, oh my gosh, like this color, this size, or this shape. And here we are years later, all of us digging these tubers out of the ground. Weeks of dividing, but that's one job. It's okay.
Yeah. And I mean, you said, what did you say? You have like thousands to dig or something. So, whew. Well, if I could snap my fingers and do that for you, I would.
Everyone snaps now.
Oh man. Okay. So that's the one thing that you would want to be done, but what is the one thing that you love to do? Like if you could be your one job on the farm every day for hours upon hours, what would it be?
So tough. I know this sounds so nerdy, but I love the planning of it. Like I love curating the growing list, essentially, of like what you're going to grow, what varieties you're going to grow. It's kind of like, I describe it like collecting Pokemon cards. Like when you're like, I got to catch them all. And then it's going to be beautiful. I think that's like the most rewarding, is to see like the planning. And then when you're harvesting and you're actually making what that is, very rewarding.
I'm so thankful for people like you, Jan, who enjoy planning and who love to do that whole process. I'm sure you're going to get flower farmers messaging you if you don't already. After this episode airs, you're going to get people messaging you just being like, help me plan for all of this out.
Totally. I do see though, like there's flower farmers that are like insanely type A. They're like, I've had this Excel spreadsheet that I've been creating for the last 10 years. I need, and how many days until it blooms, and it can get very intense. There's a lot of things that you can like over plan and just get really sucked up into, but at the end of the day, Mother Nature is your business partner. So you can plan as much as you can, but sometimes it goes off the rails. Yeah. And that's okay, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You just have to be like, there's going to be some years that things that you grow are going to go so well. There's going to be seasons that are like made for that one flower variety. And then there's going to be seasons that they're not great. You know, like mm-hmm. we had such a cold spring this year to get started that a lot of things got in the ground late, and that pushed back things like 2-3 weeks. And so there is some things like some cool spring flowers, bumper crop, amazing. I've never had better of some of those varieties, but then there's other some late summer varieties that I struggled with all year with pests and heat and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, you know, it's the season, and next season will be different and it will be better, right?
Yeah. It keeps you on your toes. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So to wrap us up for today, for this episode, I just want to hand the mic back over to you, and just whatever is on your heart for the floral industry, whether it be solely for farmers or for floral professionals of any kind, just whatever you have for them that's on your heart.
I just want to like toot the horn of local growers. I think there's a lot, like I'm lucky where I live, where I'm close to the Toronto kind of like flower mecca. And so I get to go see what the wholesalers are bringing in from the world, which amazing product, no knock to that. But there is some amazing, amazing varieties of flowers that you're never going to find at the market in the quality that you're going to find straight from the farm. And I think if you're a florist in any area, whether you're up in Canada or the States or anywhere in the world, is to try to get connected with your local growers, because the quality and just the cool variety that you're going to find at the local level is going to be different than what you're finding at the big wholesalers at times. And that can really set your designs apart from someone else. And I think that's really cool. And very like, yeah, I just think it's an important thing to do is support your local people, to support them, but also to like grow and get more creative in your own design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I am totally on board with that. And I second your tooting of the horn. Toot toot. Let's toot the horn. Well, Jan, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and just tell us about the process of your farming, and even just share your heart with us a little bit on this episode. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate everything that you're doing to love your own community through flowers too.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And if you're listening again, you can find Jan over on Instagram at village.flowerfarm or online at villageflowerfarm.ca. So go over there, shoot her a message and tell her how awesome she is and what a great job she's doing. And just remember that the things that you're doing too, they all matter. And every flower that you give or grow, or every dahlia tuber you dig, there's purpose in it and there's meaning in it, and it's going to touch somebody's life. So keep doing what you're doing. We're cheering you on. To all of you out there, thanks for listening. Your work with flowers matters. Here at Team Flower, we are cheering you on as you deliver light and grace and love the world through flowers, one bloom at a time. Thank you for listening to the Team Flower Podcast.